Let me tell you about something new. A new show called G's Power.
G's Power.
Real talk for real saints.
Are you ready?
And it's for real.
Welcome to G's Power Hour live every weekday at 11:30 a.m. on Never Had It So Good Entertainment Network. Your host, G, will bring you informative and entertaining guests and a variety of topics in a way that you can absorb and enjoy. Listen in weekdays and call in at 516-387-1944. We love interaction. All shows can be downloaded if you miss one or found on iTunes the next day. G's Power Hour is powered by Never Had It So Good Sports Media Network.
G's Power Hour.
Yeah.
Well, good morning, brothers and sisters, kings and queens, angels and saints, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G, live with you today. Thank God. Been a crazy time right now, but I appreciate you all hanging in there and being with us today. Got two words for you, and then we're going to just run off with this subject. Breonna Taylor, okay? I know you're hearing about it. You're seeing the impact of the decision made yesterday in Louisville. And so I've reached out, and he has graciously agreed to join us today, to Kevin Anderson, who is a civil rights attorney here in Florida. Good morning. How are you, sir?
Good morning. I'm doing well. Thank you for inviting me to be with you today.
Thank you. You're always welcome. You're always welcome. The good part is you agree. The bad part is always something. I shouldn't say this, but it seems like it's always something negative. We're going to kind of work on that a little bit. But, man, I don't know where to begin with this one. So I guess what I want to address, and then we can kind of get more into the nitty-gritty of the actual case, is to have a better understanding of what a grand jury is and does and the impact it can make both negatively and positively on a case.
Sure. A grand jury is a twofold body. The assembly of a grand jury is actually a safeguard in some respects to a prosecution going overboard with charges against a person where the evidence might not support those charges. The grand jury also has another function, and that function would be to bring a criminal charge against the person if the jurors believe that enough evidence exists to establish probable cause for that charge to be alleged by the body. Typically, a grand jury has a set number of members, and their proceedings are confidential. In other words, they're secret. And the composite of people who conduct the grand jury proceedings are limited. For example, in Florida, the state attorney is tasked with obtaining the witnesses and presenting testimony and evidence to the grand jury. But the grand jury ultimately makes their own decision. The grand jury also is from time to time brought together to investigate things and to serve special functions as they might be inclined to do so based upon the period of time they are put together for certain matters within each respective state. But principally, we hear about a grand jury indicting people for very, very, very serious offenses. For example, in Florida, capital crimes, and that is death penalty offenses, have to be presented by grand jury indictment. And an indictment is the actual instrument or the product that is used by that group of people to formally accuse an individual of crime.
So, you know, I mean, it's it strives to be fair, it seems a little cloak and dagger because nothing really gets revealed in terms of whether or not, I mean, you just almost have to just trust, because it is the grand jury, that it's fair. And that just seems a little hard for, you know, especially in cases like Breonna Taylor's. So how do we go about trusting that particular system, especially when it seems like the judgments that come out of that, you know, out of the grand jury seem to be still a little bit unfair, that in some cases it just doesn't seem like justice is being served.
Well, the trust component is why the people are assembled. Because, you know, a prosecutor doesn't need a grand jury to bring 99% of the charges that are alleged or brought against human beings here in Florida or in every other state for that reason, for that purpose. The people are this buffer. You know, what they are doing is they are sifting through the evidence. They're listening to the testimony. And sometimes they even turn in no bill, which is to say that there isn't probable cause for the charge to exist. Grand juries exist on both the state and the federal level. So the balance is the people, not, the prosecutor presenting presumptively the witnesses and the testimony. You know, gee, I'm with you. You know, I mean, it's tough to trust the outcome, you know, when, you know, we just saw, you know, yesterday, what shocked the nation and probably, you know, the world. We all know what happened based on what's been reported, and we all know that Ms. Taylor killed in her own home after she was awakened, and we all know that the municipality, they settled a lawsuit that was filed against them because there was liability, which says that there was some responsibility and accountability. And the lawsuit was based on her being shot by the police. And, you know, everyone expected there to be some connection between the charge that the officer has now been accused of and her death. But we didn't see it. So, you know, I was floored when I saw the outcome. And, you know, you can see by the protest and the comments that are being made that I think our nation is rocking and reeling because of what we just experienced.
And I think it's important to note that someone in your position with your legal expertise is as shocked as everyone else. I think, you know, because I think in some cases people expect, well, the people with the training and the familiarity of the law, you know, it's going to be cut and dry. It's going to be black and white. And you're saying, no, you're not necessarily so, you know, and there is a human aspect to all of this. Okay, so are there – I don't know how to ask this. Is there any chance that this could be revisited? I mean, because of the fact that there are so many wrongs involved that got her killed, but still this person is not being charged with her murder.
I saw you struggling to find the words to put this next question to me, but just put it out there, man. At this point, say what you're thinking, man. Because it doesn't matter, you know. So we can just talk freely and just kick it with each other here, so to speak.
There's
recourse, but it's probably not going to be the type of recourse that is going to be meaningful. There is a collateral FBI investigation that is taking place right now, and I believe the FBI stated that they would continue to work beyond the state charges that were announced yesterday. So the FBI, you know, they are the investigating arm for the Department of Justice, can present enough information to the DOJ, and there could be federal charges that flow from what happened. You know, so yes, this can be revisited on another level. It's doubtful, but it could happen. It could happen. If you recall in the Rodney King case, what mm-hmm. happened with the officers in California following the disappointing verdict at the state level, the federal authorities picked up that prosecution and went forward. You know, they just simply they weren't having it, man. And I applaud the federal government for what they did and how ultimately in the criminal court that case turned out.
So is it because that the federal government is afraid of overstepping state authority? Is that what it is? Are there jurisdictional type of questions involved here?
Well, you have concurrent jurisdiction. You know, there are a lot of things that the states can prosecute and the federal government can prosecute. And it's not double jeopardy, you know, because you got two different governmental entities or sovereigns, so to speak. So you see that all the time, you know, sometimes with gun offenses. But as a matter of policy, the Department of Justice and the states, they have understandings about what's going to take place and what they don't want to take place. But neither controls the other entity. An example is, let's see, what was the fellow's name? Walter Scott. Do you remember that case in South Carolina where the individual, he was being taken into custody and he started running? It was in Charleston, South Carolina. He started running and he got shot in the back. And mm-hmm. it was on videotape. And what happened was that the authorities brought the charges against the police officer from South Carolina. And a hung jury. Now, you know, we're watching this guy running, back turned, and we're watching him get gunned down like a, you know, like a deer on doe day in the fire break, okay? And mm-hmm. and people have trouble convicting this police officer for essentially shooting this guy. It's crazy. He murdered this guy. So ultimately, there was a federal plea deal that resulted in this police officer getting a 20-year prison sentence. So that's a case where you've got concurrent jurisdictions taking action, you know, presumptively because the state government kind of let us down.
And we, unfortunately, it seems like with these cases, it's okay to shoot somebody in the back when they're running away. I mean, yes, they did wrong, you know, but, you know, it's easier to, what, shoot somebody than, I guess, to get physically fit enough to where you can chase them down and catch them or whatever. I don't know.
And I know it's not okay. No, it's not okay. You know, it's not okay to shoot people in the back. It wasn't okay to shoot Rashad Brooks at all. It certainly wasn't okay in Kenosha. You know, it's not okay. That's a problem. With that, and you know, accountability is something that we have to come to terms with, so that this stuff stops. And if it doesn't, it's you know, who knows where we're going, man? Because the government is failing black people. Period.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's the government, but it's more than just the government. It's society as a whole.
Well, society isn't shooting people in the back. And society can't bring charges or decide not to bring charges. And, you know, they're not bringing
no-knock
warrants.
But it's the people that choose who represents us, okay? It's the people that say who goes to Washington. It's, you know, it's the people that decide who, you know, is in law enforcement, who's the sheriff, you know, who's this, that, and that. And right now I have a problem here in Central Florida. And I'm just going to put it out there because I'm on a mission to try to change this, where we had our sheriff that was elected by one party. Now, the sheriff represents the whole county, not you because you're not here in Orange County, but, you know, anybody that's in Orange County, the sheriff represents us. Everybody in Orange County should have a right to select sheriff if it's an elected position and not appointed. But it was a one-party deal, okay? I think it's just, and it's not a matter of whether or not I was with that party. I mean, I don't care what party it was. It just shouldn't have been weighted the way it was. So that needs to change. That should be a nonpartisan race. And that's
Is he doing a good job? Do you think he's doing a good
well,
law enforcement job?
That does not matter. That does not matter. I mean,
okay. All right.
Okay. That's not my concern. I mean, yeah, if he wasn't doing a good job, then, yeah, he should be kicked out, period. But my thing is that not only a handful or, you know, and I say a handful because not everybody in that party voted, but a handful of people shouldn't be deciding who is the authority in Orange County for everyone. Everyone should at least have a chance. But I'm getting off subject.
No, this is the subject. The subject is speaking up, you know, and that's one of our problems is that we don't talk, you know, and
right.
when we have something to say, we don't speak up, and when we speak up, we aren't loud enough. You know, we need to be heard. You know, we need to let folks know that we're not going to take it, you know, and it's not a black thing necessarily or a white thing. It's a justice thing. You know, we live here. We are all affected, whether you're white, purple, black, whether you're Asian, whether you're Latino, you know, we are Americans and we live amongst each other and we should have equal justice. Yeah.
I mean, you're so right. You're so right. We are going to take our first break really quick. We're talking about the Breonna Taylor decision. This is G's Power Hour. Never had it so good entertainment here with civil rights attorney Kevin Anderson. The number, if you want to join the conversation or ask a question, is 516-387-1944, and we will be right back.
Over the past 60 years, Dove Beauty Bar's superior formula has remained unchanged. But when it comes to beauty, everything changed. Together, we redefined beauty. We said no to stereotypes, and yes to every type. We let go of judgments and embraced what makes us unique. We're proud to have been there with you, caring for you every step of the way. Here's to the next 60 years.
This is Douglas Dobbs of Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service. We have served the Central Florida community for 29 years with quality funeral and cremation services. Honoring all religions and faiths, we have been here for many grieving families. Whether it's a complete funeral service with a burial or a simple, dignified cremation, Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service is here for you. Located at 430 North Kirkman Road at the 408 Expressway, Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service, 407-578-7720. Dobbs, dedicated to serving our families.
Good morning. Welcome back to G's Power Hour. I never had it so good entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today. We are talking about the impact of the Breonna Taylor decision yesterday. And first of all, before I go forward, I do want to just say that whether you agree with the decision or not, there's a way to kind of handle stuff that it does not cause harm to someone else and probably would have a greater impact, and that's a discussion that we need to have too. But, you know, just please don't get yourself into bad trouble. Good trouble, like John Lewis said, is fine. Bad trouble, don't get yourself into because you don't agree with something. Find another way to kind of channel your anger. There are constructive ways. If you don't know how, ask somebody. But in the meantime, we are back with Kevin Anderson, civil rights attorney here in Florida. And one of the things that you just said that I agree with is about the speaking up part. And it's not the yelling in the streets and all that kind of stuff, We have to be smarter about how we speak up. You know, we have to utilize more than just the immediate tools. And when I say immediate, that means going out in the street, waving signs and all that kind of stuff. If anybody really pays attention, a lot of stuff happens that gets done behind the scenes, where, you know, you don't find out about it until, you know, the situation is upon you, so to speak. You know what I'm talking about.
I do. You know, I get so upset when people try to get out of jury duty. Everybody does it, you know.
Yeah, me too.
You know, they're telling you, hey, look, man, I have to work, or I've got the trip planned, or there's some, you know, somebody in my life that I take care of, man, I can't do it. And, you know, and I'm just gonna focus this on, for the moment, people who tend to get the shaft more so than others, Black people, when we are dealing with criminal outcomes. They complain oftentimes, and you know, for the record, I am Black, all right? And when I say they, I mean people who look like me. they, you know, about, like, you know, no representation, you know, I can't believe this happened, but yet they aren't willing, or we aren't willing, to hit the jury. You know, we're, you know, coming up with these excuses. You know, when I'm picking a jury, you know, doing some of my criminal work, you know, people, they'll just lie to me about something that, you know, is just not, you know, going to hold water, just to get out of jury service, you know.
There's so many discussions we can have about that. One is that financial impact on a Black person that misses jury duty is so much more devastating than it is on a person who is not African American. We've got to admit that here. Okay, when you have your median income, we know that median income for most Black folks or most Black communities is much less than it is for white people. We know that, especially for Black women, it's pretty bad. Okay, but so when you ask, especially if it's a one person head of household, to miss work to get compensated for much less, and they still have to do things like take care of the kids and pay the bills and get groceries and all that type of stuff. Trying to make a choice between jury duty and the already daunting task in terms of keeping your head above water is an issue. It's a problem. Just is.
I mean, there are non-Black people who are, you know, single family or single head of household individuals, or they have low incomes as well. And I know it's a hardship for other people in other ways too. I think you have to balance it also, because it's even a greater hardship if you don't have representation. You know, if there isn't a fair makeup of a jury that is going to reflect the community, a good cross section of the community. You know, and I hear that. I hear what you're saying over and over again. But then, you know, the same person who's telling you this, you know, they don't have a problem going out and getting a brand new car, you know, and spending, like, you know, 40% of their disposable income, you know, on metal and rubber. You know, they don't have a problem,
right,
like, you know, taking these, you know, trips wherever they need to go, or, you know, overextending themselves, you know, on, you know, for things that they purchased through credit. You know, the vast number of jury trials aren't for longer than a week. You know, there are some exceptions, you know, in criminal court, like homicides, or maybe, a sexual battery, or maybe some complex fraud case or something like that. You know, but, like, it's kind of one and done, and you're out of there, you know. I mean, I don't think it's going to kill people. We got enough people in Florida to have a better representation. That's where I'm going with it, basically. We have enough to do a little better.
Okay, we're gonna get into that a little bit at another time, because there's so many. We can talk about the disparities, you know, from sun up to sundown, and still wouldn't get to them. because the, I mean, there are other things. There are other things that bother me, like, for example, why do they have, when we talk about accountability and everything, why do they have governmental hearings in the middle of the day when most people can't take off of work to give impact, you know, their input, you know, into decisions that are made by our local governments, you know. That's another one. Because, you know, a lot of people got to understand that a lot of things happen from the ground up. Everybody looks at the top, but they happen from the ground up. You know, I usually work the elections, and I see people that they don't want to be bothered or concerned with voting for the judges. And it's like, man, really? Because one of these people that you decided you didn't want to bother looking into or vote for or against is one of these people that you may end up on the Supreme Court at some point in your lifetime or your children's lifetime. So, I mean, you've got to really not be lazy about your vote and stuff like that. Or you got to find a way. I've said maybe instead of trying to, if you can't attend, let's say, a public hearing or something like that, maybe a group of you or somebody from an organization that you are involved in or that, you know, represents you, maybe someone can go on behalf of you, or people take turns going, because we as Black people got to get more involved in those processes too. Because I, you know, I mean, I've been blessed to have, with my being a realtor, just having that flexibility of schedule, and I have managed to attend, you know, some meetings every now and then. There needs to be more presence and more people willing to step up, like you say, and say something. In a situation like that, because those are where the decisions are made and not necessarily in the streets with the signs. That has to happen too, but there has to be kind of a combination of tactics, of strategies. There has to be a strategy, basically. So.
Yeah, more now than ever. More now than ever. You know, it's just right. As I'm speaking, I'm actually probably a mile away from a protest that's getting ready to start up, and you know, and I asked myself, you know, I said, okay, so where are we going with this? What's going to happen? All right, you know, we're going to walk around and we're going to get vocal. Probably get a little wet today because it looks like it's going to rain. And in the end, where is it going to get us? You know, what's going to happen? Are we going to get another, like, you know, grand jury disappointment? Are we going to, you know, wind up seeing another person shot in the back? Are we going to, you know, wind up being accused of being an angry mob, you know, when we're really just exercising First Amendment rights? Or, I mean, we're going to get rubber bullets shot at us, or we're going to get maced this time, maybe killed, you know, what's going to happen? You know, so I'm fired up, man. I'm fired up. I mean, so there you go. I mean, I'm ready to
talk. Okay, so I have a question about an email you sent me. How do you get a copy? How did you get a copy of this? The indictment?
Oh, you're asking for sources and people. Oh, are you really?
I'm a journalist.
I can't give up my sources and people.
It's
but
all
I have,
just
you know,
oh, my goodness
and
gracious.
And I shared it with you.
Yes, you did. And I appreciate that.
All right. Well, Let's talk about it.
Okay. What the heck is wanton endangerment? I'm sorry. What?
Okay, for those listening who don't know what we're talking about, I shared this morning a copy of the indictment against Brett Hankinson. Brett Hankinson, he is the officer who is accused of firing, I believe, 10 shots through Breonna Taylor's home that ultimately got him fired. And the indictment that was returned against them was for wanton endangerment in the first degree. And there were three counts. And in each count,
Breonna Taylor's name is not included. The first count includes the initials CE. The second count as the occupant of the dwelling where I guess a stray bullet went or stray bullets went is identified as CN. And the final person is identified as ZF. But nowhere in this charging document, this indictment, is Breonna Taylor's name. This is a travesty. I understand why protesters and people who are righteously indignant are shouting, say her name. Say her name.
Right.
This government didn't have the respect and the forethought to at least identify Ms. Taylor, person mm-hmm. who also was put in the line of fire. This charge of wanton endangerment in the first degree deals with an extreme indifference to human life where a person could die or a person could be seriously injured. Well, she did die.
She is
so
dead.
So you're telling me, exactly. So you're telling me that we're going to go after this police officer for shooting and missing her, but endangering someone else who did not get shot, and we're just going to totally ignore her, Ms. Taylor? That's outrageous. It's just outrageous. And I want people to understand that this grand jury is guided by, so essentially they made a decision based on what they were presented. They don't sit in that room and flip through papers and files and decide what charge that they're going to indict a person for. They act on what they are presented. I do not believe that they were presented an alternative that would have possibly come back with something related to manslaughter or maybe second-degree murder. Or how about this same charge that they were willing to bring an indictment back for? Because this police officer's bullets weren't the bullets that shot her. He missed her, okay? I think the bullet that killed her from the FBI ballistic analysis was from Officer Cosgrove. I believe the analysis concluded that he fired the shot that killed Miss Taylor. So, they could have, and I'm talking about the grand jury, they could have brought a wanton endangerment in the first degree and identified her posthumously.
We've got to take another quick break. And I'm not taking any more breaks after this. I'm just kind of forewarning folks, I'm not taking a break because we got lots to talk about. The number, if you have a question or comment or something, is 516-387-1944. That is 516-387-1944. We are here with civil rights attorney Kevin Anderson. This is G's Power Hour. I'll never have it so good. Entertainment, and we will be right back.
Having a wedding, reception, family reunion, planning a banquet, or some other fundraising event. Need to share your knowledge through a workshop or seminar, or it's a difficult time and you need to plan a wake or repast. Let us help. At our gatherings, let us reduce the stress and make the occasion memorable, treasured. Call our gatherings at 407-968-9387 or email ourgatherings@yahoo.com. Let us help plan your special event.
Hi, I'm Tim Garrison. You may know me as Timmy G. Yeah, I know. It's been 2 decades, but I want you to know I'm back in the Arklatex. And I've got a mix of music that can help you relax and chill out. It's smooth. It's relaxing. It's chill out jazz. The soulful mix of smooth jazz, soul, and smooth R&B. So join me every Wednesday night, 10 p.m. to midnight, on K-Ham Radio.
Are you chillin'?
Good afternoon, and welcome back to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today. We are talking about the impact of the Breonna Taylor decision and so much more. If you want to join the conversation, take the number down because I'm not taking another break until the show's over. 516-387-1944. We are here with civil rights attorney Kevin Anderson of Anderson & Welch, LLC, with offices in Palm Beach and Atlanta. I don't understand when you have a case that's centered around one person, the person that did actually suffer the greatest impact, how that person isn't even mentioned. And then on top of that, the person that got fired isn't even the person, from what evidence shows so far, that whose bullet killed her. Okay. It is confusing as all get out.
Doesn't make sense. It just doesn't make sense. I mean, you know, I tried to reconcile, you know, the prosecutor's, analysis, which really didn't say much to me. But I disagree with Mr. Cameron.
Well, then also the other thing is you talk about what's being presented to the grand jury, and I want to find out how careful that process is, because if the grand jury, basically, you can't necessarily get mad at the grand jury if the grand jury did not get all of the information that they were supposed to have. Who is responsible for making sure that they have all of the information they're supposed to have? And, someone could be withholding information. How do you know whether or not someone is not withholding information?
You don't. The proceedings are very confidential. They're secret. Give a significant degree of trust and respect to the system that is run by state attorneys or district attorneys, or.
Hello? Mr. Anderson, are you there? Oh, or am I still here? One of us is lost. There you are.
Exactly.
Okay.
You get me? Are we still on?
Yeah, I got you now. Yeah, I didn't know if you were lost or I was lost, but anyway, you were saying.
I was saying that you can't abandon this grand jury system because this particular outcome or the outcome of other cases doesn't work the way that we want it to work. You have to rely in large degree, almost wholly, on our prosecutors who are responsible for running the grand jury, with respect to evidence, witnesses, and the flow of testimony. It's unfortunate, when it comes out like this, but there is no ability for a defense lawyer to go in to a grand jury proceeding. I've represented individuals who have gone before a grand jury, but I have to stay outside, and then that person will go in and present whatever is being asked of that individual. So, mm-hmm. That's the nature of the system, and I cannot, tell people that, it never works, because it does work.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like what just happened. And I think I'm going to just kind of, zero in and shoot, so to speak,
sure,
that target, because I don't like it.
So is there a way to insert, and this sounds weird, but is there a way to insert Breonna Taylor back into a case that should have been focused on and surrounded, surrounding her to begin with? Is there any way to insert her back into this case? Or does a second case have to be put together?
Well, I addressed the federal possibility of an indictment there. I did address that. And I am not barred in Kentucky, so I do not know whether there could be a superseding indictment. And that's essentially what is utilized for the purpose of amending a prior indictment. There are systems for amending an indictment in order to include additional information, more counts, and other
individuals who are now a part of or victims even who are part of the criminal episode.
Talk about the no-knock policy.
No-knock warrant.
I'm sorry?
No, you were.
Because my understanding, this is not just kind of a local thing that is done on a federal level as well. Can you talk about the pros and cons of this? I was listening to some people kind of bantering this about yesterday. You know, in some cases it's good. If they're trying to catch someone off guard in the act of involved in the actual criminal activity. But my question is this. They were after someone that does not live or I don't know if they ever lived with Breonna Taylor. I guess it was supposed to be her ex. They got corroboration, I think, from the Postal Service and other people that he was receiving packages at this address. So my question would be, why not monitor the Postal Service and or set up, you know, I guess I'm watching too much television, but some sort of thing where they catch him receiving the package or something.
I agree. I think
where's the surveillance?
I agree.
Okay.
I
don't think she would have been dead. None of this would have happened. Because she obviously moved on with her life. She had another man. You know, I don't know I don't know all of the details of the story, obviously. But why couldn't this have been done differently?
Well, what I didn't send you. Closing that was the affidavit in support of the search warrant, which identifies mm-hmm. the activity that was observed. And apparently there were two individuals who were seen dealing drugs from a place that they call a, quote, trap house, unquote, and that they were also seen parked at Ms. Taylor's residence as well. And on one occasion that is identified in the affidavit, one of the individuals pulled up and parked in front of her house and actually went inside the house and came out of the house with a package. And so the postal inspectors then did the research, apparently, and discovered that one of these individuals had been receiving packages at Ms. Taylor's address. In addition, Ms. Taylor's car, or at least the car that was registered to her, was also seen parked in front of that trap house. So there was a connection between the drug house and, I guess, Ms. Taylor's car being in front of the drug house, and there was a connection between the person who they knew was involved in some illicit drug activity and Ms. Taylor's address. But, you know, that was just, you know, it was enough, I think, to look into the matter. And I agree with you, surveillance could clear that up, but certainly not enough to use a no-knock warrant in the middle of the night. You asked me to address the no-knock warrant. They have their place. No-knock warrants have their place because you can't announce to people who don't want to be caught that you're coming. And especially when you're dealing with drugs and you're dealing with very, very dangerous situations, the element of surprise is important. But there is also a balance there when you're faced with a situation where a person could wind up being killed, such as was the case here. What they could have done, and I've seen happen, is if they wanted to go into the house with the warrant, and you were afraid that evidence was going to be destroyed because of your detection as law enforcement officers, I've seen the electricity cut off. I've seen the water cut off so that there would be, like, no lights and there would be no way to flush anything down the toilet. And then the place would be surrounded. There were surveillance cameras. I've seen, literally seen the SWAT team accompany the officers on these raids. They accompany the officers on these raids because of these situations where they, things just get out of control really, really fast. The SWAT units are highly trained to deal with fluid situations that involve violence and also involve surreptitious law enforcement activity in order to subdue the target and to obtain evidence. To my knowledge, that was not the case here. So, you know, they said they knocked, but that defies logic. This is a no-knock warrant. So why would you knock if you have a no-knock warrant? I don't
right.
You know,
I don't either.
I don't get it, you know. Yeah. You know, so apparently they even knew that that no-knock warrant was you know, something that might result in a problem. So,
You know, one of the things that I heard yesterday was that there was a neighbor that heard the police announce themselves, which kind of goes against no knocking or whatever. But anyway, if it's in the middle of the night, first of all, you're probably asleep. I mean, my thinking is that if you heard it, you were probably awake. If you didn't hear it, you're probably asleep. Okay, so by the time it registers that someone said something, you know, and someone's barging in your house or whatever forcibly, you know, for those that do have weapons and everything, that would probably be the logical thing is to defend your home, you know, defend your life. My question is, my school of thinking right now is this. And I could be wrong, so I'm not trying to offend anybody, but this is the way I feel. Had this been a non-black person who grabbed their gun to defend themselves, this would probably be a stand your ground case, okay? And the person probably would not be dead, but probably maybe in jail or something or awaiting trial or something like that. I don't know. That's just my school of thought. But I think, you know, I have yet to hear anyone say anything about stand your ground. You know, was he standing his ground?
His charges were dropped. They did arrest him, and I think they arrested him for attempted murder. Because he shot the lead officer coming in the door. And I believe that some notions of self-defense given consideration in not proceeding to prosecute him because he was entitled under the circumstances to meet force in the protection of his person and people in the house, you know, when the officers made entry. He did not realize that they were officers. It wasn't entirely unreasonable.
Right.
No. If this was unnecessary, in the warrant itself, I have that too, by the way, in the warrant itself, you know, they're looking for drugs. And
you've got all sorts of jewels, don't you?
I got all kinds of stuff here. And they're also, there's one line that says that they are authorized to seize any weapons that may be used to protect illegal narcotics and activity. But they're looking for specifically, I'll tell you, marijuana, cocaine, heroin, meth, and any illegal narcotics or paraphernalia. You can't flush a gun if the water's cut off. You can't, like, dispose of any of these drugs if you can't flush it. And they're certainly not going to eat a gun. They're certainly not going to eat, you know, all of these drugs. They simply didn't have to kick that door in the middle of the night. And there was no reason for the other police officer, Hankerson, to go outside and then to start shooting into a closed blind through the window. That's entirely unacceptable and reckless, you know.
The other thing I'm wondering too, if the person that they suspected of being involved with the drugs, if they know he doesn't live there, why aren't they at his house? shooting, not knocking, all of that.
I agree. I agree. You know, what's kind of interesting is that one of the people who was involved in the surveillance, his last name is Walker, and Brianna's boyfriend's name, his last name was Walker as well. There are two different people. Let me just make that clear. All right. I don't want to hear from Mr. Walker here. Now that could be a coincidence. All right. It could be a coincidence. And who knows now, that might have been the next place they were going to hit, you know. Who knows, you know.
Another thing I need to say is I'm not trying to being said. I don't know. I have not heard. There's nothing yet that I have heard that says that she may not have been involved in some way, shape, or form. But I don't think that constitutes going in with guns blazing, especially if this is a first-time encounter, and not necessarily ask. Because my thing is this. If they maybe even suspected her or the other guy, you know, maybe going and saying, you know, we'd like for you to come in, you know, for questioning, or we'd like to come ask you some questions. We have a warrant, do the regular warrant first, and then maybe follow up with some kind of action. And like I said, you know, I'm not in law enforcement. I don't know how this all is supposed to work. But the thing is that usually if you are accused of something and you're not guilty, then you really don't, you know, you may grumble about it, but you really don't do anything about it. If you're accused of something and you're guilty, then you're going to probably try to cover yourself. That is when I think maybe they should have swooped in and done something. But if they hadn't even leveled any type of accusations or charges to begin with to prompt any kind of, let's say, cover-up action or anything, because like you were talking about the drugs, if there's a whole big box of drugs that, you know, or whatever the case may be, they're not going to get rid of them all at one time, because you can always go and talk to them, ask them questions, go out the door, turn around and do a no-knock. I mean, that would have been my thinking.
You see that all the time. You see them posing as UPS delivery people. And in this particular case, there was proof that there were packages being delivered there. So why not pretend like you are one of the deliverers of a package and knock on the door? Hi, Mr. Walker or Ms. Taylor, I'm delivering this, or I'm coming from Amazon or whomever. And as soon as they open up the door, at that point, rush them. You know, I mean, there you go. It's a no-knock warrant. You know, that would have worked. That would have worked. Do it right then and there in the daytime, you know. Sure enough. So they're just not thinking. They're just not thinking. Yeah, they weren't thinking. So, but they tried to, after the shooting, they tried to kind of cover it up a little. When you see in the report that they didn't even identify that she had been injured. Can you believe that? You know, you shoot someone and they ultimately die, and you don't identify that the person who's been shot has been injured. That's crazy. And I think there was some delay also in giving her medical treatment that was reported as well. I want to address something, with respect to, the civil recovery, you know, because I do a lot of that type of work. Her estate, Ms. Taylor's estate, they were able to garner a $12 million settlement. That is a lot of money. And there are those who are going to say, well, you know, she got her justice. You know, I mean, she got what most people don't. You're going to hear that. Now, I want to deal with those folks before they even start. You know,
she's still dead, y'all.
Yep. She's still dead. She's still dead. But that amount of money is so much greater than Eric Garner got, or Michael Brown, or Freddie Gray, or Oscar Grant, or Philando Castile, or Sean Bell. It is so much greater. There is a difference, though, between culpability and liability. Liability is dealing with compensation for the debt, and culpability deals with justice. So while she has received money because of her debt, we are addressing the culpable aspect of what happened as a result of what the police officers did in this particular case. So there is no amount of money that will bring her justice. There's no amount of money that will bring her justice, okay? And, you know, the concern that is now, I think, in the forefront is whether she can receive justice.
So we got a few minutes left. We definitely don't have enough time, but I've got to get you back on here at some point. What can we do? How do we make sure that there's not another Breonna Taylor incident? What things should we, as a community in general and the Black community specifically, be doing?
Oh, apparently, you know, you can't sleep at night and answer your door. You know, I mean, she basically, you know,
sleep is shift.
I don't have the formula for avoiding excessive force resulting in wrongful death or serious bodily injury. What I can offer is the services of lawyers like me, who are civil rights attorneys, who are trained in how to deal with these matters on the back end. And also, I can encourage people to participate in government. These folks making decisions about, you know, who our police chiefs are and, you know, who our government officials are, they are placed there either by your vote or by people who you voted in who appoint them. You know, your voice needs to be heard. You know, we got an election coming up. If you're not registered to vote, go register. You know, you got time to register to vote, man. Like, be heard. Be a part of the process, you know, period. Seriously.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, in the short run, a response. But it's not going to eradicate what's happening. This took a long time to form, and it's going to take some time to tear down.
Kevin Anderson, thank you for taking the time today. It just kind of flew by. You really needed more time. But I hope you'll consider coming back, and we catch up. I'd like to do another conversation with you before the elections, if that's okay. Just let me know what
your
schedule is.
Sure.
Okay.
Sure, I'd love to come back.
Thank you so much. Thank
you for having me. All right.
Oh, goodness gracious. Okay, and we're going to keep an eye on this case. Thank you all for listening. This has been G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Tomorrow is Faith Friday. If you have a faith topic that you'd like to address, you'd like to see us cover, you know, please join us tomorrow at 11:30. This is G's Power Hour, Never Had So Good Entertainment. Have a very blessed day. Be well, be safe, and please remember, all real power comes from God. Take care.